This is Let's Keep It Real with Sandy Joy Weston, your weekly dose of positivity with awesome stories and guests from all over the world. It's an opportunity to learn some great new things and expand your mind. We'll tackle topics from all areas of life, and as always with Sandy, the sky's the limit.
Okay, my Let's Keep It Real people. You know how excited I get about my guests, but I've been reading up on Alan Carroll for a while, and I couldn't wait for him to come on. But before I bring him on, let me tell you a little bit about him. He is an educational psychologist who specializes in transpersonal psychology. He founded Alan Carroll Associates 30 years ago, and before that, he was the senior sales training consultant for 10 years at Digital Equipment Corporation. He has dedicated his life in search of mindfulness tools, which you know I love, that he can use on everyone, young and old, to transform their ability to speak at a professional level, as well as to reduce the psychological suffering caused by the misidentification, which I know you have a lot of questions on, with our ego, and reconnect to the vast transcendent dimension of consciousness that lies just on the other side of thoughts we think and in between the words we speak. Ooh, that's deep. Alan, thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you for that nice way of describing the introduction, because it leads right into the heart of the conversation, is this idea of, I'm wearing my shirt here.
I see.
The idea of space. And so space would be a great topic for us to be able to bring light upon people so they can realize the power of space to heal ourselves mentally, physically, emotionally, and more importantly, spiritually.
Yeah. By the way, and I've been doing this podcast probably for 17 years, and your background is the bomb. I mean, it says exactly what you represent. It's awesome. All right. But before we get into that, every guest gets to pick one word that best describes their past 30 days and then why you pick it, whatever pops into your head.
I'm into love. Love is not resisting anything. So I'm in the not resisting anything. And now I guess out of love comes flow. So out of the love comes a flow through life rather than a skiing up the hill kind of a thing. It's more of a skiing down the hill. It's a lot more words than one, but gives you a bigger picture.
So do you usually focus on, like, I pick a word every day before I wake up, I get out of bed, I think one word, how I want to show up. And it's always similar, you know, but it changes. Do you have the same word every day, or do you pick new ones?
It's more like a practice.
Okay.
A practice of awareness. A practice of watching my thoughts come up on the screen in front of me and seeing whether or not that thought's going to take me for a ride, or whether I can make that thought disappear.
Oh.
Most people, they're not even thinking about the possibility of managing the thoughts, let alone making the thoughts that I'm thinking disappear. But the thoughts have a gravitational effect on your well-being. And so you want to be able to fly in your dreams. Well, you gotta make yourself lighter. And so how do you make yourself lighter? You begin to reduce the baggage of the 60,000 to 80,000 thoughts you think a day. And you put more spaces between the thoughts. And you get enlightened that way. And who doesn't want to get enlightened, huh? Everybody wants to get enlightened. You want to get enlightened, Sandy.
My whole audience wants to be enlightened. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
What other games are to play other than of enlightenment?
I want to break this down about the thoughts, because I really think that my audience would love to hear your process of how you go through, I have a thought, and if it serves you well or not, and what you do from there. Because you said that, you know, you're aware of your thoughts. So you're just aware of them. And then what happens? Like for me, like, for example, I really spend time a lot just listening to what's going on in there. And then if it serves me well, I stay with it and I keep milking it and milking it and I go with it. But if it doesn't, I acknowledge it and I say to myself, it's not good, it's not bad, but how can I shift this to serve me well? So I would love to hear what you do.
What you're describing is a level of awareness that most people don't have. So the goal of meditation, the goal of all those yoga classes that you've done in the past is to create a metaphysical space using the fifth element. The five elements, earth, air, fire, water, the fifth element, the mother of the other four elements is space. So you want to practice creating space because you can't observe anything unless there's a space between you and the thing you want to observe. And most people have no space between the thoughts because I am my thought. I am my opinion. That's who I am, Sandy. So what are you talking about? Thoughts. So you, in that situation, you are the victim of the thought that you're thinking. As you begin to meditate, as you begin to practice stillness, as you begin to practice non-thinking exercises, non-speaking exercises, you are taking something out and you're leaving nothing in. And so, for example, when I speak to you, I can speak very fast with lots of somethings in there, or I can say the same things, but I'm taking longer to say them. And so now you'll notice that between this sound and this sound, there's an empty space. So I just created space between the sounds that I speak. And if I wanted to give somebody a tip on how to transform their life, is to realize that you are an automatic speaker based on your ego, identity, and conditioning. And I can disrupt the pattern of, if I can disrupt the conditioned pattern of my speaking, I free myself from the prison of my ego. And you get to open the door and smell the flowers that are outside, that have been there all along. But it comes from the ability to observe. And so if you can't observe the thought, you can't manage the thought. Right now, the thought has control of people. But through meditation and mindfulness activities, you develop the muscle of observation. Witness, watcher are terms that are used to describe it. And so now I can notice that, boy, you know, now I look at Sandy's hair and it looks like it's a reddish brown in my reality, you know, and I really love people with reddish brown hair. I mean, wow, I want to know more about you. You're a wonderful person. And why do I love people with reddish brown hair? Well, when I was 3 years old, my mother had reddish brown hair. She held me in my arms and she read to me books. And I've associated reddish brown hair with my mother and nurturing and nice. And so my heart opens up to Sandy. But that's not the way it was, Sandy. When I saw you, I had, oh my God, I can't believe it. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, why do I have a negative feeling about the red? Well, because my father, who hit me when I was a child, who is upset, he had reddish brown hair. So every time I see it, so I'm the victim of my thoughts. And so most people have to begin to feel enough suffering to be able to close their eyes and begin to go inside. And the journey starts inside. You have to go in to get out, is the saying. And that's absolutely the truth. And that gives you the power of observation. That gives you the power to see the thought. And then you get the power to choose. You can choose to attack with your attack thoughts, or are you going to choose to speak for the Holy Spirit? And the Holy Spirit would speak with compassion and love for people who, but I wouldn't get the red hair. It wouldn't pull me, it wouldn't get me upset anymore. So you're able to stay calm in the chaos. And most people can't stay calm in the chaos because it's chaotic.
All right. I want to go into this question I got over and over again from people when I told them you were coming on the show. And as much as they study it, I got so many people saying, if one more person says ego to me, I just say, forget it. I don't want to hear it because I don't understand it and I don't get it. And these are people that really want to understand, you know? And so I would love for you to hopefully finally shed light on a lot of my listeners and viewers about what the ego is. Because I can tell you right now, so many people go, you know, if you mention ego, Sandy, that's it. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Let's just forget it. And these are people that really, you know, want to be enlightened.
Sure. People, the ego is a tool. It's a divine tool. It's not a bad thing. The ego is not a bad thing. Being is not a bad thing or a good thing. It's just a level of awareness in which you're, for example, the best way that I could understand the ego is given to me by Eckhart Tolle. Eckhart Tolle says that the ego is two types of identity. There is the identity that is my, the conceptual identity, how I conceptually would describe myself if I had to write a resume of who Alan Carroll is from the beginning of my memory to this moment of now, all the events, all the opinions, all the dreams, all the wants, all the things I believe, all my material objects, my religion, my country, all the things that I would use to identify who I was conceptually in words. And I'd write all those down. I'd write all those things down. You draw a big circle around, and I include your name. Your name's in there too. Okay. Includes your God. You got your God. I believe in Christianity as a concept. I believe in Christianity. I believe in Buddhism. But to draw a circle around that, and that would be your conceptual identity. And the conceptual identity has this great tool, has a tool called the intellect. So the intellect serves the identity. Now, the intellect, its job is to defend the identity. So whatever I've identified myself as being. So let's say people in the audience, they've identified themselves as being from California. I live in California. I love California. California is a wonderful place. So that's my identity. So that's the root in my, like a tree, a root in my psychological space. I'm a California lover. So that's my identity. I'm a California lover and the 49ers. So the 49ers and the California lover. Now, my intellect analyzes what's going on outside of me. And if anything out there threatens my identity, then my intellect is like a knife. And then I defend my identity. So the struggle that people feel is that they don't know what they've identified themselves as being. And they find themselves using attack thoughts to defend something that they don't even know why they're defending it. I just know I don't like red hair. And so it changes the chemistry in my body. It changes my thoughts in my body. It changes the spirituality, emotions. It does a lot of damage to you physically by holding on to your egoic identity. Fortunately, Eckhart Tolle said if there's a conceptual identity, there's a non-conceptual identity. And that is your spiritual part of yourself. That is the, in which there are no things, non-concept. There's no concepts at all. Mindfulness, definition, is the space in which there is no judgment. A psychological space in which you're in the moment of now, you're watching the movie right now, or watching the movie, and there is no judgment. So that's the space you want to get to. But right now, people have opinions, they have thoughts, so the ego gets in the way. So your first step one is you write down on a piece of paper all the things that you consider yourself to be. It's like, I am, and then all the direct objects. Mm-hmm. Write them all down. And then I am is who you are. I am is just awareness. But that's a conceptual explanation of it. You have to experience it by closing your eyes, having a practice in which you go into yourself for five mm-hmm. minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes a day, in which you breathe and just watch the thoughts. Just watch the thoughts go by. And then you just catch yourself thinking. The exercise that I do is given to me by Sadhguru. And he's called the Sunya meditation. And the Sunya meditation, Sunya means zero or nothing. Okay. It's the ability to 16 minutes a day. And you close your eyes and you say a mantra. Same mantra. Everyone says the same mantra. And then you just close your eyes and watch the thoughts. And you catch yourself thinking, and then you say the mantra, it makes the thoughts disappear. Catch yourself thinking, say the mantra, makes the thoughts disappear. So pretty soon you realize, I don't need to hold on to the thoughts. The thoughts are impermanent. The thoughts are just floating by. So now, right now, most people's thoughts don't float by because the ego is holding on to special thoughts because I'm special. So when you let go of the thoughts, they just float by. And so now you live in this space of levitation, where you are not being sucked down into the despair of the ground, because thoughts have the power to do that. That's your ego. And so you want to dissolve the thoughts. And how do you dissolve the thoughts? Well, you have to have glued, the thoughts are glued together. Your ego, the ball of cluster of thoughts. I describe the ego as this ball of thoughts. It's clustered like a star. It's dynamic. It grows. And what when you do is you can put holes in it. You can put holes in the space. My favorite commercial when I was raised that I can remember was the commercial that had to do with the drain, the Drano. I guess it was a Drano commercial, and they had the glass pipe. And in the middle of the glass pipe, the S part of the pipe, it was gunk, just gunk. Oh, the junk in the pipe, it wouldn't allow the water to go through. So they added the Drano, and the Drano started to gurgle, gurgle, gurgle. And at the other end of the pipe, you could see stuff starting to loosen up and loosen up. And then all of a sudden, it just, the whole thing released. And the water just flowed through the glass pipe. And you felt so good about that fresh, clean water flowing through the glass pipe. Wow, that's why we went out and bought some Drano. Well, space turns out to be the Drano that will dissolve the ego, that allows you to elevate your consciousness to a higher frequency. And so how do you create the space? That's the question, is how do you create space?
Okay.
How's that for an answer, huh?
I know they're going to be like, what the? All right, so let's just back up. Number one, you did start at the top saying the ego is not a bad thing.
That's right. The ego is not a bad thing. Most people think the ego is something to be, the ego is a wonderful tool. Right now, you are being used by the ego rather than the ego, you using the ego. The ego is a wonderful tool. Divine, matter of fact. It's not just wonderful. It's a tool of divinity. It's a gift from God. Thank God we got an ego.
Okay. So then, just to summarize, for someone who's really new to this, if they just again, what is ego, Alan? What would be like a sentence that we could hold on to?
Sure. Ego is the sum total of all the thoughts that you think.
Okay. I like that. Okay. So then, if it's the sum total of all the thoughts that we think,
from the beginning of your life to this moment of now, every thought, every experience that you think is stored in memory. That's your ego. That's your identity.
Okay. And then that would be said then, which you said, it's not good or bad. Some of those thoughts serve you really well. Like at first you said your mom, you know, had red hair, you were making, you know, and so you thought warm, loving thoughts. And then others, like your dad beat you, and then it was horrible. So some of the thoughts from your ego serve you very well then.
Right. So there are two types of thoughts. There are loving thoughts and there are attack thoughts. Loving thoughts come out of the Holy Spirit, the being, the spirituality part of us. Yeah. The attack thoughts come out of my ego to defend myself against people like you, Sandy. That's all I can say about you and that place you come from. I don't know where you're raised. So those are attack thoughts. So those are destructive thoughts. They are just, they change the chemistry of my body in a negative way.
Okay.
Feels good to the ego, but it's not good for the spirit.
But if that's true, then I can see how the ego is not good or bad, because if it's the sum of all thoughts and my thoughts are coming from what I always say, they're either coming from fear-based or love-based, same thing, right? Then if they're coming from love-based, they're going to serve me well.
You bet. They are building blocks
of fear, like you said, then it's not going to serve me well. So it's making me think of ego in a totally different way, because I didn't think of it as the sum of all thoughts.
Right. Sum of every thought. It's already there. All the thoughts are stored in memory. Consciously, you don't remember probably many thoughts at all. But there's 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day, times the number of days, times the number of years. That's a lot of thoughts that are stored in the memory. Now, there are, you know, strong identities. The strongest identity are your thoughts about God, because God is deep, deep rooted. In some people, God is very deeply rooted. They will die defending their God. I'm not going to die defending Häagen-Dazs ice cream, although I like it, but I will die defending. People will actually put suicide vest on and die because they have such a strong, strong belief. But it's not healthy. It's great to have the saying that I use is, it's great to have a strong opinion, but hold it lightly in your hand. And most people have a strong opinion and they hold it tightly in their hand, and that's defending their opinion. And you don't want to be defending your opinion, because that's not gonna. Even having an opinion is suspect, because how can God have an opinion about the universe? Everybody is sinless. Everybody is forgiven. Everybody is a son of God. How can there be sin? You know, there's sin. Well, because they did that. Well, that's the ego speaking. And so you want to believe that there is a divine presence that surrounds us and that we're surrounded like a fish in the sea. It's like you are this beautiful fish, and there's a sea around you, and the sea is the womb of God. But you never experience the sea, so you're so busy preserving the fish, your identity. But as you begin to practice disrupting your identity, and how can you practice disrupting your identity? The easiest way, the quickest way, is to realize that there's an empty space between the sounds that you speak. And you consciously begin to create empty spaces between the sounds that you speak. And then you take your flashlight and you shine it into the empty space and start doing research. First thing you'll notice, Sandy, is that you can breathe. You can't breathe between hello, but I can breathe between hell, low. And so breathing would be in terms of enlightenment and mindfulness, breathing is the number one. If you can control your breathing, become conscious of your breathing, God is there. But most people are too busy in their head. They're not busy in their breathing. And breathing is the key to having a high frequency state of consciousness. It's like, that's a tip, folks. It's you want to be practicing your breathing. Forget about reading books. Just practice breathing. Just practice breathing, because breathing is the red pill in the Matrix. Yeah. Breathing is the red pill.
Yeah.
Mindfulness is the red pill.
Okay, so let's be really concrete here. Let's give an example of you're having a fearful thought for you, like a fearful thought pops into your head. What do you do step by step? Like, you notice it, something you're freaking out about or scared about. Because I got this over and over again, like, okay, so I take the time. This one woman says, I meditate, and then I am aware, oh my God, you know, I'm so scared, like I'm scared of flying. I'm scared of traveling. There's like, I'm scared of that. Like, all these fearful thoughts happen to my head. She does breathe, but what else should she do?
If you have a practice in which you are every day going to the gymnasium of mindfulness as a regular practice, organically, the creation of the space fruit will appear in your reality. And when you have the creation of space in your reality, which comes from doing push-ups, you don't do push-ups, there's it could be any fruit. You can read all the books you want, but you got to do push-ups. You then have built the psychological awareness or access to the metaphysical fifth element of space. You begin to use that space to create a space between you and the thought. And when you are able to create a space between you and the thought, you then realize, I just had a thought. I just had a thought about fear. I just had a thought about danger. I just had a thought about red hair. I just noticed that thought. And you know what? I noticed there's tension in my body. Whoa, there's tension in my body. I, Well, let me see if I can get my tension reduced before I figure out what I'm going to do out there. So I go inside my body and notice that there's tension. How do you reduce the tension? You reduce the tension by regulating your breathing. So now you're regulating your breathing, the tension is reduced, and what do you know? That thought that was so strong 2 minutes ago is not as strong as it was, because you've taken life support off of the thought, and you've taken life support into your body. And all you got to do is take life support off of the thought, and the thought will no longer be nurtured. But if your identity is such strong about those people, they shouldn't do that. You're not able to take life support off of the thought because that thought's attacking their identity. So I can't take life support. I'm going to put stuff in it, not take stuff out of it. What are you talking about? This is a life or death situation. And so, you got people who are reactive because they have no space. So space takes time to develop muscles to go to the gym. So it's not a conceptual thing. It's a thing that if you take the time to create the space, you will have a cushion between you and the event. And when there's a cushion between you and the event, you have a choice. And you need to get your body back under your control. What I suspect this lady talking about, I meditate, I breathe, and stuff like that. But you need to regain control of your grounding, and she's not grounded because already you're upset and judgment that creates tension in your body. Tense. So you got to get your body still. And most people, the question is, well, how do I get my body still? Well, one, live in the stillest environment that you can live in. No noise, trees, fresh air, beautiful views, no sirens, no, just try to get the quietest environment. Use headphones. I don't care what you get, the quietest environment. So there's no agitation. That would be, and that's an ideal situation, Sandy.
Yeah.
But you want to move in that direction of no agitation, no disturbance. In the Star Wars movie, there's a disturbance in the flow. You know, there's a disturbance in the wah or whatever it was. The force. There's a disturbance in the force. There's you don't want any disturbances in the force, and that comes from your commitment to your meditation, your commitment to practice, your commitment to being still as often as possible. So when the big event happens, you are not off center. You've been practicing stillness for months, and you realize, oh, I had this thought about, hey, wait a minute, go into my body. Breathing under control, no tension. So now my thoughts are in my body, not on the thought that I was thinking. And it works. We can do an exercise right now. We can do with the audience. Simply have them go ahead, and if you're not driving, just put your feet flat on the floor. Put your hands face up, index fingers touching, palms resting on top of your thighs. We're just going to take three breaths through the nose. And we're going to push the belly out, so we want a big breath as possible. And when you breathe out, imagine the tension in your body, if there's any tension, flowing through the soles of your feet. We'll just do three breaths. I'll even count it. So breathe in through the nose for a count of four. One, two, three, four. Hold the fullness for a count of two. Breathe out for a count of five, four, three, two, one. Let the energy flow through the soles of your feet. Emptiness for a count of two. Breathe in for a count of four. One, two, three, four. Hold the fullness for a count of two. Breathe out for a count of five, four, three, two, one. Emptiness for a count of two. One more. Breathe in for a count of four. One, two, three, four. Hold the fullness for a count of two. Breathe out. Release any physical tension through the bottom of your feet. Five, four, three, two, one. Hold the emptiness for a count of two. And as I count to three, come back up to the surface. Open your eyes. Three, two, come to the surface. Open your eyes. One, and you're back into space. So that is an exercise. I call it the stop technique. It's an exercise that allows you to disrupt the train of thought that you're on, of which you don't even know you're on a train of thought.
Yeah.
But you're asked yourself, what was the train of thought you were on before you did the exercise? And you don't know what the train of thought was on because it's disappeared. So you took your attention from the thought, life support, off of the thought, went into your body, and that thought that was so important, you can't even remember what it was. And that is a gift, to be able to make thoughts disappear, because then you realize, I don't need to be the victim of the thought.
Absolutely.
And boy, people are a victim of their thoughts.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think sometimes we take for granted the simple things that have such a huge impact, because it's just like, how can the breath be so powerful? But it is.
It disrupts the patterns. The patterns. You're always on a train of thought inside your head. People and all the thoughts follow each other. There's no two thoughts at a time. It's sequential, and yeah, they're all connected. So all the thoughts are connected. They're like, and you begin to realize that there's actually a little space between the thoughts that you think, and then you begin to look a little closer, and you, can I make that space bigger between those two thoughts that I'm thinking? And all of a sudden you realize I can make them disappear. Woohoo! They may come back, but boy, at that moment,
yeah,
they've gone away. And one of the Buddhist monks said to me, he said, bless all the thoughts and let them go. And I realized that I didn't bless the bad thoughts. I blessed the good thoughts, the happy thoughts,
wonderful
thoughts. But the bad thoughts, no, they need to be replaced with good thoughts. No, he said, bless all the thoughts. So thoughts are this, but see, most people, there's good thoughts and bad thoughts. Well, that's a judgment.
Yeah.
And judgments.
Absolutely.
Judgments are something, the tool of the ego. The ego judges and compares. And so you want to get to a place in which you no longer judge things. You just have, you have compassion for things that you would have judged in the past as bad. I mean, there's so many teachers. People are doing Tony Robbins. I know you talked about Tony Robbins. People do the best they can with the resources they have. And that one helps me understand why some people, it allows me to give someone space when I realize that, they're doing the best they can with the resources they have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Werner Erhard, in his conversations in San Francisco, 10,000 people at the Cow Palace, Jonathan stands up and says, Werner, what about my relationships? My father doesn't love me the way I want my father to love me. My girlfriend doesn't love me the way I want my girlfriend to love me. What about that? Ha ha, Werner. Werner said, well, what you're getting from your father and what you're getting from your girlfriend is a bound up expression of an absolute love. And the highest love that they can muster right now is the way they are expressing it to you in this moment of now. Ooh. So that allows you to come into the conversation with compassion, sympathetic understanding of another person's pain. And that is a gift that you bring of empathy and compassion, which is one of the indicators that you're well down the road of enlightenment when you begin to practice forgiveness. And most people, I can't forgive the unforgivable. And that's the ego talking. And so the ego is in the preservation of my grievances, because that makes me who I am. Matter of fact, I'm against grasshoppers. I don't like grasshoppers. Grasshoppers are bad. Matter of fact, I'm the president of the Grasshopper Club, and we have a grasshopper flag and a grasshopper song. We are the grasshoppers. We are the grasshoppers. We want to keep them alive today. Kill the enemy, kill the enemy. So you have songs and chants to preserve your identity. And these people get caught up in their identity, but with meditation and space, the glue that holds the identity together dissolves. And you don't have to think about it. You can't read a book. The glue that holds the identity begins to dissolve, and the glue is dissolved with space oil. You begin to oil the space between the things, and the things begin to flow. And now you have flow in your life. And most people don't have flow. They have resistance. And that's not a fun way, because resistance causes disease in your physical body. You don't want any resistance. But how? But that's wrong. You know, it's, maybe it's not.
I like the grasshopper song.
Thank you.
No, it's so true. All right. Listen, we got to get this in about the speakers, because we started out saying that, you know, you've traveled around to 60 different countries, and you mentioned that, you know, getting them up on stage was a way to get really work with the spirituality. But my question to you is, you have different things that you talk about speakers, and one is, what is a mindful, spacious speaker?
When you speak, you are blowing air out of the instrument called your body. And I put my tongue and my lips, and I blow just the right amount of air for just the right amount of time to formulate, to vibrate and formulate a sound. Hello, Sandy. So now I'm vibrating the air. Mm-hmm. So in speaking, you are vibrating the air to create sounds. Everybody knows how to do that. But the second part of speaking is no vibration. That's called a pause. And so there's a dance between when you watch the great speakers. It's not talk, 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 talk. See, there's no space. What I want to say to you, Sandy, and what I want to say to everybody listening to this conversation, that the conversation that you and I are having is going out all over the world. And you ask yourself, what will happen? Where will it go? How will it plant seeds that grow things that bring love and kindness into the world? So what am I saying? I'm saying an extemporaneous talk that just flows, but it almost makes sense. It just, well, yeah, I'm bringing seeds in the world, enlightenment. Yeah, I like all that stuff. But it's a total creation. It's a totally created. I'm performing my thought. And I perform it with one tool, space. I put empty spaces between the sounds that I speak. And when you can put empty spaces between the sounds that you speak, you can breathe. You can relax the physical body. You can think about what is the next thing you want to say. You have a choice about an attack thought, because someone has offended your ego. I need to defend myself. Or I can have compassion and say nothing, or say something that cools the pain that the other person is experiencing. And so a mindful, spacious speaker has control of the timing of the delivery. And most people, amateur speakers, do not have control of the timing. They're automatic speakers. They just talk, 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 talk. But a mindful, spacious speaker is operating on manual transmission. I'm choosing to change the gears. I'm choosing to use my hands. I'm using to change my voice. Where am I going to put my eyes? Where am I going to put my body? How am I going to breathe? How big of a breath I'm going to have? All those are logistical things that can only happen if you have the time while you're speaking to think about how I want to perform my thoughts. So mindful spaces speakers are people who are performing their thoughts. But you don't perform your thoughts all the time. Around the dinner table, you don't need to say, please, would you pass the salt to me? So you don't have to practice around the dinner table. But when you need to perform your thoughts, you want to be able to insert the pause into your pattern of speaking, and it will transform. Just watch any great speaker. Watch the politicians. They're amazing at what they do. Whether you are a Republican or a Democrat, those guys, those women, they know how to make their words sparkle and have impact, even though they may not say anything, you know, anything important. But they know how to rouse up the audience, say what the audience identifies with, and say, I'm for that. And they say, yeah, I'll vote for that guy. He identifies with the same thing I identify with. Rawr!
And I so agree with you. And you're right. I've taken so many different speaker courses, and they really did work with the pause, and it has such impact. It really does. But how did you get into that, working with speakers?
Teenage years, I'm reading the autobiography of a yogi by Yogananda, Paramahansa Yogananda, the Self-Realization Fellowship. And it was just the realization that there's something else going on around here that I don't know about, that I think knowing about would make my life a lot nicer. So that started me down the path of mindfulness. I then went to San Francisco in my 20s. I met a fellow named Werner Erhard and did the S training, which is now Landmark Education Corporation. And that got me into one of their programs, which was the Guest Seminar Leaders Program, where you were trained to speak in front of an audience, terrified of speaking, because I'm shy, raised in the 50s, conservative, Republican family. You know, speaking is just not, no, it's dangerous out there. That's dangerous speaking. And I had to break through the fear, the horrible fear. I mean, it was suicidal, it's social suicide. I'm in my early 20s, we're 200 people, we're in San Francisco every 3 or 4 weeks to do our weekend training programs. You had to stand up and share. And boy, standing up and share when you're 20 years old in front of people was just horrible, horrible, horrible feeling. Because especially with women, because you don't want to look like a fool when you're 20 years old. You want to look, hey, honey, has life really cool, huh? Yeah. You like to spend time with me. Yeah, all right. But that's not what's going on inside. What's going on inside is I'm 5 years old, screaming my head off, and just terrified. But I did the exercise. I went through that experience. I raised my hand, and then I realized, hey, I know how to help people do better in public speaking. And so then you start the journey back in 1983, when I worked for DEC doing their advanced communication skills workshops and speaker workshops, because that's my expertise. I'm a psychologist. I did the soft skills. And then I realized that corporations will pay money to train their speakers how to speak. So I've earned my living with corporations, because the account managers and engineers need to be able to speak in front of audiences. Gotcha. Most people are not able to speak because they have no space between their sounds. So after 40 years of doing it, I just tell people to pause. And it's like, what do you mean? Just pause. And it transforms their ability to speak. So thank goodness for Werner Erhard. Thank goodness for the courage I had to raise my hand. And thank goodness that there's folks like you that I can share things that I've learned on my journey that is then spread out into your audience so that they can realize that, gee, I mean, all I have to do is slow down my speaking. Just slow down your speaking. Just slow it down. It takes a lot of energy to speak. It's like shooting a bullet. Like, hello, how are you? And there's always, if it's a hard bullet, a powerful bullet that defends a strong identity, then the recoil of the bullet hits you. Boom. So loving bullets have no recoil. Loving bullets are compassionate bullets. They embrace. But the ego bullets are harder. And they hit you. They don't hit the thing. The imaginary thing you think it hits doesn't hit you. It hits yourself. So you want to realize that the danger of anger, especially anger, would be the oof. You want to avoid anger with a 10-foot pole, because it's the most destructive of your emotions to your physical body. But the ego feels great with anger, because, well, it's righteous anger. I really, oh yeah, they really deserve it. Let's do it up, gang, 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 gang. And what is, it's damaging your body. Eckhart Tolle said that the ego weeps for what is lost, and the Holy Spirit rejoices for what is gained. That's the power of the pause, the power of the spaces. And that will bring joy and light and love into people's lives. And that's the spiritual trip. It's finding that light, that love, finding that space of non-judgmental space in which everything just is. Everything just is. There is no meaning to anything. And that's called the listening without knowing. But people don't listen for not knowing. They listen to, I know everything. And so that immediately creates a prison for people that keeps them trapped inside a prison because they know nothing. What do you mean I know nothing? You come from that you don't know anything about what's going on right now. But people are, they bring the past into the present, because what I know is that you have red hair. Well, that's something from the past. I know that you're a nice person. Well, how do I know that? It's from the past. So everything is from the past until you begin to manage your thoughts and you realize that there's a space and that I'm not the victim of my thoughts and I can choose to create any picture I want to in my mind's eye. I can paint any picture I want to about this situation. And to me, the picture that people want is divine. They want a picture of divinity, a picture of enlightenment, a picture of absolute joy, peace, bliss. That's a picture that people want. That's the one I'd vote for. That's the one I'd vote for.
I think that's what most people vote for.
I would think so.
It's up for debate how they get there, you know? So do you still work with speakers?
Yep. Still work, still travel. I was in Saudi Arabia for 3 weeks working with Cisco and HP and their Saudi Telecom is their big, you know, communication center there. So I travel the world. I don't travel as much because I enjoy being home.
Yeah.
But I do like training because it nurtures part of my beingness to be able to coach people. And I coach people online. I coach, you know, people who can't travel. Can do it online.
Yeah.
And so that's another vehicle that we use. And we're doing a training. We did a training last week in Massachusetts. We're doing another one down in Dubai. Dubai's a big headquarters for a lot of corporations. So we spend quite a bit of time in Dubai. Mm. And I'm off to a place called Kakistan. I've never been to Kakistan, so that'd be another country. But we delayed that training. So part of the beginning was I wanted to travel. And the Lord gave me travel.
Do you travel with family or friends or business acquaintances?
It starts out with business, and then the business pays for the hotels, and then you can bring the family.
Yeah.
So my wife had never been to outside the United States, so we had a training in Paris. So the first time she traveled outside the United States was on business class. We stayed at the Marriott Hotel because I had all those points that were saved from all the travel. We lived in Paris, stayed there for 2 weeks, and that was a wonderful way. Took the kids, they've never been to the Middle East, so we took them to Egypt because I was doing a training in Egypt, and we toured Egypt, and then they flew to Dubai. I stayed in Egypt to do another training, and one of the things that I like about international exposure is that you are conditioned by the media. And what the media shows you, you believe is real. Mm. And the media may have a slant against certain types of people. And so they show you things that put those people in a negative light. But when you go to the land of those people, you don't meet the people you see on the media. You meet people like you, normal folks with family and education. And so you realize that, wait a minute, the programming that I'm receiving about these bad people, because we have to destroy the bad people. They have to be bad. They can't be good. I mean, you don't want to destroy good people. You want to destroy the bad people who are a threat to our identity. But when you show the kids different religions and different people, it makes them a little more compassionate and a little less reactive to things that people say about those people or that country. It's like, You bring your own weather with you. If you are a happy soul, you see happy souls. If you're not a happy soul, then you see other miserable souls. And you can create your own weather, and the weather is heavenly with the Holy Spirit as your guide, rather than your ego as your guide, because the ego is it wants to preserve the fish. The being wants to preserve the ocean of fish, and you realize that it's this lifetime. It's better to see if I can become an ocean, and so I am the all that contains everything. I'm not something in the space of the all, but I'm the all that contains everything. So I contain you. So you are a fish in the sea, and I'm a fish in the sea, and we're looking at each other, and you have red hair, I have black hair with a white thing, but we're still spiritual beings having a conversation about spirituality. And you don't want to be fooled by the form that you see. You want to realize that you're just a different light bulb, but the spirit of God and electricity in you is the same one inside of me.
What a wonderful gift that you could give your family too.
Oh, what? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Citizens would be international citizens rather than a citizen of one country.
Yeah. What a wonderful gift.
I had the same thing about religion. I thought I was raised Christianity. My kids, we ought to take them to church. And I took them to church, and I felt okay until they came back after a year or so, a couple of years, telling me that Jesus is the way, Mary is the way, like the other ways are not right. There's this way. And I'd say, no. That's not what we want. We want to have compassion for all life, all the ways. Not your way is the way, it's a way.
Absolutely.
As soon as you get to a the way, then you're dealing with separation. And that's not what I consider a healthy choice.
I agree. All right. We got to wrap up soon, but I got to get this one thing in, because I know there's a question here about reducing nervousness with people that speak in front of even just a few people. When I took a speaking course, I thought everyone wanted to be a keynote speaker. And the one girl goes, no, I work for the UN. And I just want to get up there without being really nervous and stuttering. And so there was a lot of people there, just like what you work with. They just want to be able to present with confidence.
You bet.
So what do you do to help them?
The cure for nervousness, anxiety, is that in your mind, you're thinking about the future. I'm going to do something now, and the consequences are going to be, they won't like me, they'll reject me, I'll make a fool out of myself, I'm going to be nervous, blah, 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 blah. So you're in the future in your mind. You're not here in the moment. So you want to get here in the moment. Well, how do you get here in the moment? You get here in the moment by grounding, centering the instrument that's going to make the sound. Well, how do you ground the instrument? Well, first of all, you have to have the thought. I need to ground my body, Alan, before I speak. If you don't have the thought while you're up in front of the audience that I need to ground my body before I speak, your body's not going to get grounded. So you have to have the training to remind yourself to say the thought to ground your body. Mm-hmm. Then you have to be able to ground your body. You have to know what grounding your body means. Well, there's three ways to ground your body. Right now, there's three ways I can ground my body. One is I'm aware of my feet on the floor. Just be aware that your feet are touching the floor. That's one of the anchors on the sailboat. Mm. That will cause the sailboat to be steadier. Then I say to myself, well, before I speak, I want to make sure I look at Sandy's eyes. So that's the second anchor. I'm going to look at your eyes. I'm going to ground my feet. So I have two anchors now. And then why don't I touch something? I can hold, so I can touch the desk or touch the podium, just physically touch something. So a wall. So I got one hand on the wall, I got 2 feet on the ground, and I got my eyes on Sandy. So to tell yourself to do that, you can't be thinking about, do they love me? Do they like me? They can't be thinking about dinner in the future, because you're putting your attention into this moment of now. And you'll notice that there is no tension. There's no nervousness. There's no anxiety in the present moment. And so every time you speak, you get yourself into position. You anchor your feet. You take the breath, which is like singing. You're going to sing a song. So you take a breath that gives you some energy behind what you're going to say. If I don't take a breath, but if I take a breath, then I'm much fuller.
Yeah.
And so step one is you want to get your body grounded. You want to practice that at home. You get grounded just practicing, so you get yourself grounded.
Yeah.
And that would be number one. That will reduce the anxiety. And that's number one. But the second part, you better have earned the right to speak. You better have a deep, thick ice under your feet. And so you don't want to get up on stage with thin ice under your feet. Because when I speak, I'm like, I'm throwing something at you. I'm throwing words at you. It's like throwing a snowball, but I'm on thin ice. So you'll notice that when I push out the energy, it pushes down on my feet. And if the ice psychologically is thin, because I don't know a lot what I'm talking about, then I'm afraid I'm going to fall through the ice. Mm. And therefore, my throw to you is weak. But if I have thick ice under my feet, boom, throwing the ball is not a problem. I can throw the ball, but getting my nerves under control is the issue for me.
Yeah.
So the pausing creates the space to allow you to have the thought to ground your body. If you don't pause, if you don't have a space between the thoughts, then you don't have control of your body. You're automatically doing things with your body, but you have to create the space by pausing that gives you control of the command override control of your body. Breathe, pause, relax, focus the eyes. Use this as an object to create a demonstration, whatever you want. But you have to be able to create that space that tells you what to do with your body, which is ground your body before you speak, which will reduce the nervousness.
You know, I'm thinking about what I do. Every time I go on stage, Alan, I run out of stage, plant my feet, I take a deep breath in, I close my eyes, and I say to myself, I'm here to serve. And then I open my eyes and I go, hit it. And all of a sudden, it's like divine intervention takes over my body. Not that I haven't done my homework, because I really, really practice and study and study and practice and study. But I just did a TEDx a few weeks ago, and every time I practiced 1,000 times, but I would, you know, forget this, forget that. And I'm like, listen, I'm just here to serve. When I went out there and I did that, it was like every word just flowed so perfectly. And it's funny because even my husband will say, I'm known for making up words. I superimpose words. And my friends and family in a fun way go, what was that word? But when I go out on stage, that doesn't happen. So something bigger than me is taking over my body, because I don't miss a beat. I'm not kidding. Now, I'm saying I do practice.
Yeah.
Even when I practice, they're like, I think that's a made up word. And then all of a sudden, that's it. And it comes out. I do that every time.
And do you put spaces?
Oh,
pauses,
yeah.
Between your sounds?
Oh, and I worked on that for a while, because I used to get out there and just blah, 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 but nope. Mm-mm. I know. And I've practiced when to pause and not to pause.
Right.
And where my hands go, you know? Yeah.
Yep.
I took a course over COVID because I thought, okay, well, I'm not going to be traveling that much anymore. And it was a perfect time to do it. Yeah. So it was great.
Yep.
All right, Alan, we got to go. Thank you so much for being on the show. I really, really appreciate it.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
My Let's Keep It Real people will really appreciate it. I know they're going to share it, like it, and rate it. But before we go, I want to know where they can find you. How can they look you up? How can they reach you? How can they work with you?
Well, certainly going to the website would be a starting point. I'm sure it will be in your show notes.
Yeah.
If they want to write it down, it's a ACA. MindfulU.com. ACA MindfulU.com is the website that allows you to see the trainings that we offer. It allows you to sign up for the trainings. It has information, has knowledge, has things that you can use. I wrote a book called The Broadband Connection, The Art of Delivering a Winning IT Presentation, because the Ciscos and the HPs of the world, they're all the engineers and account managers. Yet the communication techniques are the same for anybody. So that would be a book, if you like to read books, that's available on Amazon. My second book is going to be so I'm working with the title, but something like the Tao of Speaking. And the Tao of Speaking is to realize that there's a yin-yang, the yang would be the forward thrusting of the energy, the yin would be the feminine pausing of the energy. And so there's a dance between the forward thrusting of the energy and the pausing and the breathing. So they go in sync. And I like that thought. So there's another book that's, can't say when it's going to be done, but it's certainly in the process.
Yeah. And is there
and any- I love to do podcasts. So I do a podcast. I'm the host of the Mindful You podcast.
Oh, cool.
And I love to have, you know, people on my podcast. And I also love to be on podcasts. I like being able to share things that I've learned on my journey. So I'm available for that also.
Cool. Is there anything we didn't get in that you want to say to everyone?
I appreciate you listening. And my blessing is that you will plant a seed of silence and cultivate it. Maybe 5 minutes a day, pausing, silence, and see what grows. And that will, as they say in the Middle East, inshallah, and God willing, will allow you to reduce the human suffering that people experience from an ego identity rather than the identity with the being and the Holy Spirit. That would be my blessing and my wish for everyone.
I like it. All right, my Let's Keep It Real people, you know what I'm going to say. Until next time, toodles.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to share and subscribe if you enjoyed the show. And remember, keep spreading the positive.